Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. And in between our podcast episodes here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports over on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, the Astros continue to fight through health issues and stay within striking distance of first, even without their big man. But how much could these next 13 games tell us about Houston's place in the division? Is it time for a lineup shakeup? I bet I know Josh's answer. And Jeff Paston unintentionally stokes the fire of an ongoing debate amongst Astros fans. We'll tell you where we fall out on it. Gents, we've complained for most of the season that the Astros games have been boring, low-scoring affairs. While the series against KC remedied at least the latter, we had a walk-off and a late come-from-behind victory, grabbing the series win. The offense continues to do enough at this point. Jeremy Pena, Isak Paredes, and Jake Meyers just continue to be pillars on both offense and defense for this team. After a nice stretch of games, Christian Walker had a rough series against the Royals and continues to struggle mightily with runners in scoring position. Charlie, what were your observations from the week? And is Houston just a healthy Yordan away from being able to put together a run that could see them take control of what seems to be a pretty competitive AL West?
Good series win over the Royals. A good pitching team. Granted, the Astros missed arguably Kansas City's two best starters in Seth Lugo and Carl Reagans in the series. But hey, play the hand, you're dealt. This has been a terrible come-from-behind team in the late innings over the last couple of seasons. And to put back-to-back a late-inning dramatics in the W column, good win over what is presently a playoff team and was last season a playoff team in the American League. Poised to take over the division? No. I mean, it's conceivable. And if Yordan ever gets over this muscle strain, right, we're 10 games and counting on Yordan, A, he would need to get back to career Yordan as opposed to stinky 2025 Yordan. But it's one component, a huge component. So the Astros getting him back, that it's if A, then B, you're in charge. No more so than if the Rangers get Corey Seager back and he's Corey Seager. And Adolis Garcia and Marcus Semien hit at all. We can look as well at the Mariners if they get their stud starting pitchers back. And then there's spunky Oakland playing in that minor league ballpark in that four-team scrum. Only the Angels are clearly dead in the water at this early stage. But the Astros going into Arlington at two games over 500, one game out of first place. So there's nothing elite about any of the threats in the American League West, but the Astros are obviously one of those threats.
I think Yordan will be a big piece, assuming he's Yordan when he comes back, because the Astros, if you look at him for the season, 13th in OPS, not terrible, not great. But if you think about it, they're also 18th in slugging, 19th in runs, 24th in homers. So I think the difference you'll see with Yordan coming back is just more thump in the lineup, more home runs, more extra base hits. Because even the Astros have been playing a lot better lately, right? Last seven games, 6th in OPS, 7th in slugging, but still 23rd in home runs. Last 15 days, kind of around the same, 21st in home runs. So I think that is the one area where Yordan could provide something, especially in the middle of the lineup when there's a lot of guys on base for guys like Christian Walker, and they're just not producing right now. If you want to avoid the ground ball double play or things like that, hit the ball over the fence. We know that's something that Yordan can do. So I am encouraged that he can help them improve with that. But even as they've been playing well the last couple of weeks, 14th in runs, and that's the thing what we keep talking about. When guys are on base, they just have not been able to deliver. So hopefully Yordan, he can be that guy. We've seen it in the past. We know he can do it. As long as he's healthy, he can give them that spark.
They need career Yordan because 2025 Yordan was part of the problems. It's pretty eye-opening that the Astros' three worst, quote-unquote, everyday players this season are their three big-ticket players, Alvarez, Altuve, and Christian Walker. Yordan's over $19 million. Walker's $20 million. Altuve's at $25 million average over the 5 years of the extension. Those are the three negative WAR players to this point in the season in the Astros lineup. So they're overcoming that, keeping afloat, getting a little bit here, a little bit there from the bottom of the order. And we probably need a little bit more heft, bulk, but dare we start coining the killer peas, Pena and Paredes, doing the heavy lifting, almost all of it, in the upper portion of the Astros lineup these days.
Amen. And with Yordan on the IL, Altuve and Walker have been far and away Houston's least productive hitters at the top of the order. Josh, you alluded to it. Runners in scoring position, especially with bases loaded, just is this team's kryptonite. We know there's a delicate balance of respect, egos, confidence. But at what point do you think Espada just has to take a hard look at this lineup and make some adjustments? Because the numbers seem to be screaming it.
I think with Altuve, it's a little more tricky because he's an Astros legend. But we've also seen Altuve's a team first guy. You know, he came out and said, hey, why don't you put, you know, Pena at the top of the order here? Altuve doesn't care about that stuff. For me, it's with Christian Walker more than anything, because, you know, Altuve will put the ball in play, use his speed to get on base. But with Christian Walker, what's killing you, he's fifth in the American League in strikeouts. That's what we keep talking about when guys are on base and nothing's happening, because you can't even get a sack fly from him. It's just a strikeout. I don't know if we brought up, he went hitless in the Royals series. I mean, just awful with, you know, what do you go with, seven strikeouts in that series. So I think that's the thing with Christian Walker. You got to move him around. We're to the point where you don't count on him even putting the ball in play when he comes up. So having him hit fourth, they can't do that anymore. They need to move him down in the lineup until he starts to produce.
The issue is then, who do you move up?
Anybody
else. As soon as Yordan comes back, well, there's one guy who automatically goes ahead of Walker. And you touched upon it, Josh. They're going to tread lightly, I think, on Altuve, the back of the baseball card and all that. But look, the move to the two spot in the lineup has not jump-started Altuve. He's just been horrific now for about a month. And you can have lengthy bad stretches and come out of them, just as Jeremy Pena's probably not going to hit all year the way he's hit over the last month. But when you're 35 years old and Altuve over his last 27 games, that's 1/6 of the season. The batting average is terrible. The OPS is sub 600 over those 27 games, one home run, no stolen bases. He just flat out looks like a player in decline. Irretrievably, not yet, but that it's year one of a five-year contract. He does not get Supreme Court justice status where the job is his for life in the one or the two hole in the lineup. Jake Myers has continued to be excellent. Do you want to put some more burden of expectation of performance by moving him up higher in the lineup, right? The on-base percentage has been solid, still carrying a 300 batting average going into the Rangers series. He leads the team in stolen bases. But do you want to put him in the two-hole and, hey, now, Jake, we're really counting on you to deliver, as opposed to adding some balance at the bottom of the lineup? These are questions for which Joe Espada is paid to come up with answers. Sometimes you can push buttons and they just don't work. What will he be willing to try? Because otherwise, in the middle of the order, you know, Yiner Diaz has come on, but then he goes 0-7 to end a Kansas City series. Walker, by the way, did hit the ball out of the infield twice in the series finale, two more times than he did over the first two games. I mean, he's back to nightmare mode to amplify the strikeout numbers. He's 14th. There are 13 major leaguers who struck out more than Christian Walker. Only one of them has an OPS as low as Walker's pathetic 625 heading into the Rangers series.
And that's the problem, Charlie, is you put up with some of those strikeouts to go along with the power, right? But we're not getting the power from him. He has four home runs and he has 50 strikeouts. To put that in perspective, Jeremy Pena has 24 strikeouts. Jake Myers has 25. So he's doubling these guys up in strikeouts and he's hitting 208 with hardly any power with just four home runs. So this is a big concern for me. He's got to get it going.
Yeah, but just let him work with some of these Astros hitting coaches, and I think he can probably get it together. We'll get on that later. It's foreshadowing, Charlie. Let's switch over to some pitching updates just real quick. Taylor Scott was DFA'd this week. And for the diehard fans that are still tuning into the games, Todd Callis seemingly spilled the beans about Hayden Wesneski's grim prognosis on Wednesday night's broadcast, alluding to him likely being done for the season. We still don't have an official announcement from the team. Shocker. Gusto and Gordon don't exactly instill confidence at this point, but Ort has looked really good over his last 8 appearances and added another weapon to this bullpen that is just way more solid than it was this time last year. As bumpy as it's been, Houston, as we've alluded to, is just one game back of first entering the Rangers series. 10 of their next 13 games are in division, 4 against Texas, 4 against Seattle, and 2 against the team formerly hailing from Oakland. Do you think this stretch will tell us anything about Houston's place amongst those teams?
I'm going to say probably not. If they win 10 of the 13 or better, then all right. If they go 4-9 or worse, you're going to lose some ground when the bulk of those games are against intra-division opponents. I just don't think there's going to be huge separation from anybody because none of the teams look good enough to really distance themselves from the pack. Seattle started the season 4-8, then went 18-6. Well, the Mariners now have dropped 5 of their last 6 all at home. The Astros still do not have a winning streak longer than 3 games. They still don't have a losing streak longer than 3 games. So I just think they're going to be generally clustered in the middle. At some point, will there be a difference-making stretch of a team that wins 9 out of 11 that you're saying that's where the division race was won, or you drop 10 out of 13 and that's where you really faded? I just think we're too early to think that this stretch will constitute that.
That's all fair. It would be nice to see them capitalize on the momentum of the Royals series, go into the Rangers series and keep that going, especially if they can do it without Yordan. And the Rangers are a good pitching team. They're, first in whip, the only team better than the Astros this year. So if they can go put those numbers up, and you're catching the Rangers at a great time with Semien playing poorly, Seager out, this is a good time to go face those guys. But yeah, I mean, it's too early in the season, and the Astros are just so a game or two, a game, above or below 500. That just kind of feels like the team they are right now. But it's just, it'd be nice to see the little signs. Pena can continue to do what he's doing. Altuve start to break out of it. Christian Walker, it's finally start to see what he can do for you. He's been good defensively at first base, but you brought him in here to hit and to replace some really big bats that left. And so far, it's been Jose Abreu 2.0.
You mentioned Taylor Scott, Brandon. He did fabulous work the first 4 months or so of last season. And we can't say cause and effect, but when the Astros needed an emergency start and they gave Taylor Scott 3 innings, he wasn't the same pitcher the rest of that season. Obviously, he was a mess so far this season. Thank goodness a guy who'd already turned 30 years old and had one really good year was not in position to get a 3-year, $34.5 million extension, because it was a little bit Rafael Montero-ish. A flash in the pan year, basically. Yes. Way better than anything he'd ever done before in the big leagues. And it ultimately cost Taylor Scott his roster spot when they needed to get a position on the roster for Colton Gordon.
The other real big thing quickly, I didn't really bring up the pitching. Like, what are we going to see from Lance McCullers? Are we going to get another debacle like we had? You already got Colton Gordon coming up, Gusto. I mean, this rotation has taken some big hits. Not that long ago, we were like, wow, look at what the Astros have in the rotation compared to all the injuries last year. And then now here we are just a few weeks later, and we don't know if McCullers – we never really counted on McCullers, but at least we were a little hopeful after that first start. Now we have no idea if he's going to be able to help you this year. Gusto, the shine's wearing off of him a little bit. How much can you count on him? It looks like Wesneski's done. Arrighetti doesn't look that close to coming back. So this is a part in the schedule where the starting pitching, the wheels really could fall off here. So keep an eye on that.
So who's heavy lifters lift not only just over this stretch, but over the long haul? I'm not saying they're prime Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz, but Hunter Brown, Fromber, Ronel Blanco off a dominant start last time out. There's your Astros big three. If your biggest problem is filling in competently in the 4 and 5 spots in your rotation, you can get by with that in a non-superpower division. Likewise, the Rangers, Jacob deGrom holding up to this point and pitching very well. Nathan Eovaldi, who the Astros see Friday night, 1.78 ERA. Tyler Malley, check on what the devil can collect on his soul. ERA lower than Hunter Brown's, 1.47 for Malley through 9 starts. Well, injury histories, DeGrom, Melly, even going back farther, Eovaldi, do they hold up? And then Seattle, when the cavalry rides in with Gilbert and Kirby, Bryce Miller, in addition to what they have. Pitching is 90% of baseball is a horribly overrated axiom, but obviously it matters. You can't have a rotation in tatters and expect to win your division.
And part of whether I think Houston can sustain the output from the pitching staff is going to be how much is that lack of depth in the starting rotation? How much pressure is that going to put on the bullpen, who's been very good? But if you start asking too much of them, it could lead to bad things. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description. Now let's get to the bleep stirring here. Wednesday was a bad day for Astros hitting coach apologists after Jeff Passan's column chronicling Alex Bregman's acclimation to Boston. From the article on ESPN.com, quote, Red Sox coaches already had put together a presentation to explain how and why Alex Bregman needed to fix his swing. Over time, Bregman had developed almost imperceptible bad habits. The timing of Bregman loading his hands was too late and too fast. Reading on, the Red Sox worked with Bregman to address this flaw in his swing. It all started, they agreed, with a poor setup and load. He is hitting 304, 381, 567 with 10 home runs and 32 RBIs in 43 games. Honestly, Bregman said, I feel like this has been the best I've hit in my career, end quote. Now, this article exploded into an impassioned exchange between Astros fans on X. When I read it, I knew we had to talk about it here. So as you guys see it, how much of Bregman's success to this point is just a good hitter on a heater? How much of it is a new environment invigorating a guy that perhaps had gotten stale in Houston? And how much do you think this is an indictment on the Astros hitting coaches who have been under scrutiny for the past couple of seasons now?
Josh, do I see blood dripping from your fangs? Go ahead.
Man, I think Brandon's probably a little bit more passionate about this than even I am, but clearly there's something there. And sure, a change of scenery or a different coach with a different perspective can give you some tips. But I mean, we're talking about Bregman returning to form from 2019. How many years have gone by where they haven't quite figured that out? And just on the video, what last week, didn't we say none of us believed that Bregman would have been hitting like this if he had remained in Houston? And then now we have all this evidence to tell us that the Red Sox fixed him. And then that was part of the narrative, right? That, oh, Bregman has his own personalized hitting coach and it doesn't really fall on the Astros hitting coaches to do this. But at the end of the day, hitters don't come to the Astros anymore and get better. Even Paredes is playing well, but it's not really an outlier of some of the good seasons he's had in the past. Peña is kind of the only one you can point to that's taken a step forward, but think how long that took for us to finally see some growth in Jeremy Peña, and to a little less, Jake Meyer's starting to show some of that. But I think there's something to it. They saw what Bregman was doing, and nobody grinds the film and talks with people more than Bregman. They found an answer that he couldn't find anywhere else. And my biggest concern is, what if the Astros are... My biggest regret, what if the Astros had found that issue with Bregman's mechanics and fixed it, and then they actually kept him, and then Paredes was playing first base, and you don't go out and sign Christian Walker? Imagine what this Astros infield will look like with Bregman, Paredes, what Peña's doing this year, and then whoever they play at second base. Like, that to me is my biggest regret. If this team could be a juggernaut, because Bregman, he almost has the same amount of home runs as Peña and Paredes put together. He only has one less. That's how excellent he's been this year. That would give the Astros star power, something I feel that's really missing with this team, and that great leadership where guys just want to sit around and talk ball with Bregman, and he helped Hunter Brown change his whole career. This guy's just, he's kind of a baseball savant. He's a really sharp dude, great in the clubhouse, speaks Spanish, speaks English. He's just he's one of those guys that's why Altuve went so hard for you to bring him back. He means a lot. He's that type of player. And the Red Sox, they're getting to see it up close and in person.
I wholly understand those saying, aha, see, Snitker and Cintron, you hitting doo-doo heads. I just see no evidence that the Astros have really good hitting coaches. But I'm not willing to say they're awful. They're awful, right? Bregman, as you elaborated upon, Josh, right? The brainiac, the gym rat. Well, over 5 years, he couldn't come up with these answers. He was not close to this player over the last 5 years while still being a good player. And then within that, coming out of spring training last year, it's the best I've felt in years. My swing is locked in. I had all my preparation. And then he started like a bum for 6 weeks. But was it all figured out when he went off in July and August? If the Astros hitting coaches are to be blamed with guys who are no good, do they have to at least get some credit for whatever lights have come on with Jeremy Peña now, with Jake Myers? That's come on. You know, it's unfair to pile on guys to point to just to those who are coming up short or not meeting expectations or who are failing, right? Is it on Snitker and Cintron that Altuve stinks so far this season, right? A Hall of Famer in progress. Well, can hitting coaches account for father time? It's a pretty damning article, though, and Bregman's quotes, and you know that the Red Sox immediately, hey, Breggy, this, that, and the other, and here he is. Let's see over the long haul. If his numbers wind up in the 2018-2019 Bregman range, yeah, I might argue that that would result in the Astros having some change in their hitting coach staff for 2026.
I don't want to belabor the point, but we've alluded to it. Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Yusei Kikuchi, just three examples of pitchers who Houston brought in, optimized their usage, tweaked some mechanics, and made them better pitchers once they got here. And maybe more damning, when Kikuchi leaves, he turns back into the guy that he really was in Toronto. Now, in fairness, we don't know if Astros coaches had made similar recommendations to Bregman, and perhaps he was just stubborn. Passan's article points to Bregman being a creature of habit and being someone who's kind of set in his ways. But we also know from following Alex pretty closely, he was always somebody who was tinkering with his swing. So the thought that he was not taking advice from Houston's hitting coaches would seem unlikely. Do you think part of Alex's willingness to embrace these changes was influenced based on Boston's monetary commitment to him? In other words, Bregman's thinking, hey, these dudes just signed me for $40 million a year. I need to hear them out.
Well, as we talked about prior episode, I think components absolutely are that Bregman was insulted or ticked off or challenged that the Astros didn't view him in an Altuve light. And of course, we'll give you more years and maybe more dollars than anyone else would because you're that special in our history. And we still think that you can be really good. And that Bregman's 31 years old starting this contract, whereas Altuve's 35 in the first year of his deal kicking in this year. So change for the sake of change sometimes can be good. He goes to Boston, an intense baseball city and environment. In terms of the mechanics, Alex Bregman's using the opposite field less than half as much this season than he did last year, right? The bat speed's up incrementally. The exit velocity's up incrementally. Fenway Park plays favorably. Well, so did then Minute Maid Park with the short left field and the not green monster high wall, but analogous. So, you know, in part with Bregman's philosophy, was it grip it and rip it with these adjustments? Don't worry about using the whole field as much, because while Alex Bregman's been magnificent so far this season, clearly the best third baseman in the major leagues, he's also striking out at the highest rate of his career. Well, you'll take increased strikeouts if you're going to be a 300, 400, 500 guy, batting average on base, slugging, and Bregman's in range on all three of those key offensive categories.
He is. And defensively, at this point in the season, if you look at the metrics, Paredes has actually played a little better third base than Bregman has. I don't expect.
And is errorless.
Yes.
So far,
and I don't expect that, you know, to continue. I think Bregman's still a terrific third baseman. But the Astros have done well with Paredes at third base. He's swinging the bat. It's just, you know, if you're Jim Crane watching this, like what Bregman's turned into the second he gets out of town, you got to wonder if he's kind of side-eyed looking at his hitting coaches, wondering, like, you know, why couldn't we unlock this? And then the other thing, if Bregman does sustain this for the whole season, does he opt out? Because he has those opt outs, right? To where maybe he could go chase a bigger deal. So if Bregman had found it here and Crane had gone along with that type of contract with opt outs, could Bregman essentially be hitting free agency again? And the Astros only got him for that one great year. Who knows? We'll have to see how the season goes along, but it sure looks pretty bad because Bregman is just such a captivating player. And to see him have his swagger back, he's also a guy that rolls on confidence and bravado. And when he's rolling like that, and that's why I like to see what I'm seeing from Jeremy Peña. It makes me think that he's getting that confidence that he can be one of those top tier players in baseball, and maybe he can ascend and be consistent in that manner. So, but we know baseball is a long season. We'll see how it goes. But early on with Kyle Tucker and with Bregman, and the Astros are just kind of a, you know, a 500-ish type team. It really does feel like we're in a different era of Astros baseball. And with Christian Walker, they got to get this figured out. That looks even worse for the Astros hitting coaches. If Jose Abreu comes in here and falls off a cliff, and then you bring in Christian Walker and the exact same thing happens and you don't have any answers, what do you say after that? Or you'd have to blame it all on Father Time, I guess.
Let's include the Red Sox are also a 500-ish team with Alex Bregman doing what he's done so far. We'll see over the long haul. Jeremy Peña woke up May 15th last season with a higher batting average than he did this year while he's hitting 30 of his last 32 games. Jake Myers went to bed Memorial Day last year batting 300 and then hit like 190 the rest of the season. It'll shake out over 162. But Bregman, even in his decline, was still a good player. But I don't think the Astros are thinking, oh, we should have gone to 6-180 or 6-185 or what would have made Bregman topping that Tigers offer of 6-171.5 allegedly. And I'll guess on Bregman, if he has this kind of season, he won't look to leave the Red Sox, but they'll look to tack on a year or two at maybe a little bit lower than $40 million. But man, a guaranteed $40 million per for two more years. He'll be 34 years old starting any contract that goes beyond that. But he's building quite the nice case for himself.
I know we're running long here, but Josh, I need to circle back to something that you said because it kind of spurs another question that I think you and I have had privately. Charlie, you talked about Bregman maybe feeling like the team was disloyal to him, perhaps. Maybe he thought the team's unwillingness to give him a big contract and keep him in the way that they committed to Altuve, maybe that was a lack of loyalty, or maybe he felt that. Maybe Tucker felt that as well. How much do you think that influences a guy like Jeremy Peña's willingness to take a team-friendly deal to stay in Houston versus going out on the open market and grabbing that bag? Because he looks at the ownership in the front office here and says there's really not any loyalty to the guys who they develop and turn into stars here.
I'm not going to say disloyal. I mean, I don't think 6 years, 156 was disloyal or even insulting, but that Bregman felt undervalued or underappreciated financially. Peña, I'll go way back to Rod Tidwell. Show me the money. You show enough, especially for a guy who hasn't had his $100 million contract already, as Bregman had before this deal. Peña is still another full two seasons after this away from free agency. And he'd been fantastic the last 6 weeks and mounting a real challenge for being an American League All-Star for the first time. But I don't think he's a made man yet. If I'm the Astros, I'm not ready to go 7 years, $200 million and pay a shortstop into his mid-30s. And just to jump back on Kyle Tucker, that's the one where I think the Astros are most open to criticism. Tucker was a much better player than Alex Bregman over the last 3 years. 27 years old when you had a chance to lock him in through his prime, and they just chose to not pay or read the evolution of the market.
I think it was lack of flexibility. You know, Bregman's like, you don't want to pay me for my 35, 36 years? Fine, Astros, let's front load the deal on 3 years, and I get what I want. I can opt out if I want. You get a great player that you don't have to pay too far into their 30s. And Jim Crane just has no appetite for any type of special treatment for any player at all. And you talk about $200 million for Peña. I haven't seen him pay anybody more than $150, and that's Altuve. And how's Jim Crane going to feel about doling out more money? What if Altuve finishes this year with similar numbers to what he has right now? In the first year of his extension, it doesn't go well. Once bitten, twice shy. You wonder if Jim Crane pulls the reins back even more. That's my big concern here, especially if Christian Walker doesn't improve and you got another Abreu situation where you're saddled for another 3 years at $20 million plus and you're not willing to go above $150 million for an all-star type player. And then Hunter Brown, I mean, think of the paycheck he could be in store for if he keeps this up over the next few years. And you know they're just going to say bye to Fromber after this year. It's a foregone conclusion. Dana Brown even came out and said, we haven't even talked to his agent about an extension. So we see what's coming. I think Jim Crane's just happy to be competitive in the division, and he doesn't want to make any huge mistakes. So he's also not going to make any great decisions because he's afraid to take a big swing. Everything is just a very calculated nickel and dime kind of contract, and I don't see that changing.
Well, pulling back the reins on players mid-30s and older is probably smart, especially developed studs in their late 20s. Those are the guys you want to lock in, ideally, for the rest of their prime. If you're Jim Crane, you're probably feeling a little bit bulletproof, 8 consecutive postseason appearances and all their success. Nothing lasts forever. But the obligatory mention, hey, they're top 10 in payroll again this year. They finished number 6 last season. So they have too much dead weight, which tied their own hands with some of their decision-making in the offseason. We'll see when tens of millions of dollars are peeled off the books after this season.
Yeah, and pulling back the reins on signing aging players is certainly a good idea if you have the young players to backfill, but they currently do not. And just a reminder, Hunter Brown's agent is Scott Boras. So while he's not close to free agency, I don't see a scenario in which Boras allows him to sign early to a team-friendly deal, even though that's what we would want. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, please consider giving us a 5-star rating. Next scheduled episode drops on Monday, so make sure you're subscribed to this channel. We also drop emergency episodes as big news breaks, so make sure your notifications are on. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long, and until next time. Go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.